This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. That includes fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack.
You are still dangerous. You can be my wingman anytime.
You can be my wingman anytime. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Additional support for this episode of FilmSack comes from Timothy Matthews. Hey everybody, welcome back to FilmSack. This is episode 49 of FilmSack, which is shocking to me. This is the podcast that is mining the depths of film entertainment for all mankind. That means you, people. My name is Scott Johnson. With us today, we have Brian Hollywood's Okay, I Want Viper Dunaway.
Hey, who turned my action movie into a musical? I'm telling you, man, that chick's a dude. I mean, if you're into that, whatever, but that chick's a dude. You've lost that loving feeling. Hey, you are a dude.
You did another.
Last don't tell.
You did another, like, that was like a six-parter. My gosh, awesome. Also with this, Randy, take my breath away, Jordan.
Ooh, aloha, Scott. Brian. On October 29th, 2009, Frog Pants Studios established an elite show for the top 1% of its podcasters. Its purpose was to teach the lost art of movie review and to ensure that the handful of listeners who survived were the best odd movie watchers in the world. They succeeded. Today, iTunes calls it FilmSack. The listeners call it FilmSack.
I have some things to say about that very disclaimer at the top of the show. We'll get to that soon enough. And then we have, of course, bringing up the rear, Brian, you only want me for my Mig Ibbit.
You know, I'd love to attend your billion-dollar advanced flight training to fly these $30 million planes, but first I need to go to the store and get some cheap vinyl letters for my helmet.
And make sure they get plenty of, like, airtime. They seem to get a lot of sort of, it was almost like product placement.
They should have gotten second billing in the credits.
Totally. That was weird. So the movie's Top Gun. I'm sure you figured it out by now. Plus, we mentioned it last week. But I don't feel good about talking about it until Scott Fletcher has had his way.
Top Gun. Satisfy your need for speed and launch your home theater into the jet-propelled world of the U.S. Navy's best aviators. Tom Cruise plays Maverick, who has to struggle to control himself, responsibility, and a steamy love affair with Kelly McGillis while competing at the Navy's Fighter Weapons School, better known as Top Gun. Anthony Edwards co-stars as Maverick's loyal sidekick, Goose, while Val Kilmer glowers as Iceman. Tony Scott directs.
All right. Glowering. Exactly. I like that. Glowering is a word that I believe has not been used on this show before.
I don't think so.
I thought he flamed more than glowered.
Think so? May have been a bit of a flower.
I thought that Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer were going to both throw their back outs trying to stand up so straight.
I thought they were going to kill each other and then make out. That's what I thought throughout the entire movie. Now, I will say at the top of this, we've discussed this either off air or on air. I can't remember. But the movie is held pretty consistently by most people I talk to. And I have not seen Top Gun in about 20 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah. Like right around the time it was still huge and popular and culturally influential is when I last saw it. Yeah. And everybody nowadays say, oh yeah, that movie, if you watch it now, it's like a homoerotic freaking circus. Like that's what people say. And I went in expecting that, went in going, okay, well, when are we going to get to the beach volleyball and how weird is that going to feel? And are people going to be, you know, is it going to be overt the way everyone tells me it is? And I'm not I'm not saying it doesn't have some stuff that you couldn't like take two ways or whatever.
Yeah, like when Val Kilmer and Tom Cruise are making out. I mean, right. You could take that the wrong way, but
when they're rolling around in their towel, sure. But I'm just saying,
the screamed bit of dialogue. I want some butts. Yeah, sure.
But on the whole, I kind of didn't feel like it was as bad as I'm not even saying it's bad. I just don't even think it's that obvious as everyone says.
It's something that if you're looking for, you kind of chuckle when it's like, all right, oh, here we are all in the locker room, shirtless, standing 4 inches away from each other, and I'm going to snap my teeth at you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking for it, then it comes across like that.
Yeah. But, and that being said, I captured a fair amount of audio that seems to argue with me.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, as we get down the road here. So Tom Cruise in his star-making film, this is what made him what he is today, as much as he likes to deny that. And he does.
Scientology made him what he is today.
Well, he claims that. But he claims, I mean, what he says is, like, for example, not long after this, not many years after this, he did Born on the 4th of July, the Oliver Stone movie, which was very anti-war in every possible way. And this thing was, you know, military porn.
Yeah.
In every possible way. So
this movie was funded by the government.
His assertion that he needed to do Born on the 4th of July to equalize and rest his soul about how pro-war and pro-military Top Gun was, I don't think is all that. It kind of bugs me because you couldn't have gotten a role in an Oliver Stone film or anyone else's of any sort of noteworthiness had you not had this smashing, huge, you know, enormous success that Top Gun afforded you. So just calm down, Tom Cruise. It's like, you know,
stop jumping on the couch.
I don't want to call him out all movie or all this whole episode about all the things I think he's weird and all that, because there are actually a lot of really cool things about Tom Cruise. He's a very charitable dude, gives a lot of money to a lot of people. That thing where he witnessed a hit and run and stopped and paid for her medical bills and made sure she was okay and all that stuff. You know, the guy's got, you know, he's a human being and he's done some cool things. But when he says stuff like that, I'm just like, right. So if it's like this argument, if Ron Jeremy's last movie was the ultimate porn ever made, and then the next movie was a rated G Disney film, is Ron Jeremy going to go, yes, I felt the need to counteract my previous work as a giant wiener man to be this dude who loves animals? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it just feels disingenuous to me unless I'm up in the night.
Oh, that's a good question. Now, personally, myself, I've never seen Top Gun.
What? Oh, that's right. I forgot all about that. This was your first viewing. Yeah.
This is my first viewing. Yeah, I had no preconceived notions other than people, you know, said, oh, it's a movie. And I had the soundtrack. I love the soundtrack. I always thought it was awesome. So, I mean, this was my first viewing. And I'll tell you, I really thought it, for what it was, it held up. As far as I'm concerned, because I could have turned this on easily without wanting to review it and went, okay, I can see where they were going with that.
Well, you can see there are certainly places where it doesn't hold up. But the places where it does are the ones I think that matter, and that is anything where they're filming jet fighting going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
jet fighting was incredible. Did you like it or you didn't like
it? No, it's amazing. It's absolutely incredible, and it's always just surprising to me how well it does stand up. And I think the reason it does stand up well is because, unlike Iron Eagle and a thousand other stupid ripoffs, they didn't go a lot of green screen and they didn't do, you know, weird
scenes. Repeat scenes was my biggest concern. I was like, ooh, they're doing the jet scenes. I said, they're going to repeat a lot of this. But no, I mean, the whole thing, every time there was a jet, I never saw a repeat scene. Maybe there was one there, but I never saw it.
The repeat scene that I saw every time was the repeat shot of the heat-seeking missile being fired over and over toward the end. Mm-hmm. That happened a hell of a lot, and it was the same shot. But beyond that, you're right. Like, a lot of that footage was shot of the actual actors in the cockpits while they were out on their runs with actual fighter pilots, and they used that footage later and stuff. Randy, I think you were going to say something. We cut you off there.
I noticed it so much more this viewing than ever before, and I've seen this movie, you know, like most people other than Brian Dunaway, who are over 30 years old and under 60 and male and American. I've seen this film dozens of times. This was the first viewing where I ever thought about how they edited together all of the shots, because they have a lot of shots of planes sitting on the tarmac that are intended to be planes in the air. So, and they really use this early on in the film. When they first show the nose of the F-14, it's just sitting on the ground, but they're pretending that it's in the air, and they pan from the nose backwards, and they frame the shot so that you don't see the earth underneath it. And it's kind of clunky now that I look at it that way. But the, what they did to make it look so exciting was they cut back and forth between shots, exteriors, and these into the cockpit shots of the pilots, which again, they probably filmed on the ground, right? The pilots are just, the actors are just sitting in the cockpit acting, and the camera is sitting up
if
over the
nose. If you can call it that.
Right. But by cutting those together, you are constantly being tricked into the air. You know, you're always, your brain is getting dragged up into the sky 15,000 feet up, and it's really brilliant. Looking back on it, they probably used a lot less dogfighting footage than you think you saw because it was edited so well.
Yeah, that's pretty well put. Let's look at director Tony Scott's work here. This is also a launching pad for him. He's also the brother of Ridley Scott, which probably helps both of them. But anyway, his first film was Loving Memory, then something called One of the Missing, and they were both shorts. And then a TV series called Novelas de Henry James. Don't know what the hell that is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
That is what.
The Hunger in 1983. And then Top Gun. Now, since Top Gun, immediately went on to do Beverly Hills Cop 2, the best of the Beverly Hills Cops, in my opinion. Revenge, Days of... Revenge was terrible. Days of Thunder, another bit of work there with Tom Cruise. Then he did Last Boy Scout, True Romance, Crimson Tide, The Fan, Enemy of the State. The list goes on. And I recently saw his remake of The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, which I actually really quite liked. Thought it was great.
I like that movie.
I'm a big Tony Scott fan streaming. Is the point.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I think he's great. And I can't really think of too many of his movies I thought were crap. I really thought Revenge was bad in 1990.
Didn't like that.
No, Revenge is terrible, dude.
Are you sure?
Oh, we're going to have this fight. If you want to have this fight?
You want to bring it?
You want to do this now? You want to do this now on the show?
The Kevin Costner movie Revenge is a terrible, terrible movie.
Oh, that Revenge.
I agree with Scott Johnson.
Yeah, I didn't like that one.
Yeah, it's a bad, bad
I'm
film.
I'm looking at the description right now. I don't even know if I've even heard of this movie.
Oh, you need to see
Kevin
it.
Kevin Costner,
seen.
Anthony Quinn. Oh, yeah, sounds like I do. Madeline, don't you say that now.
Yeah. We hated this movie. Hey, but you totally have to see it.
Exactly.
So the writer of this screenplay, you know what? It's Ood. I can't say this guy's name. Ehud. Hell's blanket. Ehud Yanni. Yanni. Which I think is Yiddish for "my vagina itches." Only movie he ever wrote. So,
well, he did a mighty fine job because there wasn't a lot of dialogue, but there's a lot of quotes from it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a very influential film. I would hear a quote and immediately hear the billions of friends and people say it over and over the last 30 years, and just think, "Wow, this is a lot more impactful than we think." What I didn't know is that co-star Kelly McGillis, after doing this film and a few others, has slowly morphed into being Dame Judi Dench all these years later.
I noticed.
Yeah, she looks... I have to give credit to a Twitter follower for that.
She
looks really, really different to me. And there's a recent picture of her and Tom Cruise having a bit of a reunion somewhere in Hollywood, some kind of get-together or something. And he doesn't look any different to me. He still looks like he's about 14.
Yeah.
And she looks like Judi Dench. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
It's not that bad. Like the picture
she holds up.
You twittered was worse than the one that Samantha Jane found. Samantha Jane found this recent picture of her. She's got gray hair. She's wearing makeup. She's posing for the camera. She looks all right. I mean, how old is she now?
She's born in 57. So 57, yeah. She's same age as Tom Cruise.
53. She's 53.
Yeah.
All right. She looks fine.
She looks like a great 53-year-old.
She looks fine. She looks
you're absolutely right about that. Has anyone seen Val Kilmer lately? I have. He looks like a freaking blimp.
You can talk about Val Kilmer all you want to, but I'm telling you, he looks awesome.
In what?
He is going the right route. Marlon Brando.
I'm agreeing with Brian Dunaway. Just because you can see Val Kilmer from space is not bad.
Totally,
it's
dude.
Not a bad thing. I think he's totally going that. You know, Brandon did the same thing, and I think he's going
Marlon
that way.
Brando?
Yeah, Marlon absolutely. Brando. Sorry, yeah.
Brandon Gleason is who you meant.
Brandon Gleason. You know what I'm talking about.
No, Marlon.
You know
Marlon Brando did go
about.
That way.
Revenge
but that,
was awesome.
That wasn't a happy direction for Marlon Brando. I mean, he eventually just kind of
worked out for him. I mean, can you imagine some of the later movies if he was still that little skinny kind of guy?
Yeah, could you imagine the skinny Marlon Brando in Island of Dr. Moreau?
Right. So maybe he would have never gotten that job. But wait, weren't they in this together? Val Kilmer and him?
Val Kilmer was in that,
yeah,
wasn't
he? Yeah, I think he was, that remake thing.
That's right.
That's funny. Our second film with...
I applaud Val Kilmer for his fatness.
All right.
Can you tell me you want to see a skinny Godfather? No, you don't. Shut up. All right, then.
Yeah. Well, he was thin then. He was just old. I don't know. Anyway.
Before you continue, let me throw a quick correction. Ehud Yonah actually wrote an article in the May 1983 issue of California Magazine that inspired the film Top Gun.
Oh, that's his writing credit on this.
That's his writing credit. Yep.
Interesting. All right. So this other guy, Jim Cash, who wrote Anaconda, Dick Tracy, The Flintstones, Viva Rock Vegas.
I don't care what you say. Anaconda was a good movie. Now, I'll give you Revenge. Revenge was stupid. I was just giving you a hard time on that. But Anaconda, that's a good movie.
It's a good bad movie. I'm with you there.
I'd like to see that one.
He wrote Legal Eagles, which is a really serious legal drama. Do you really? My mom thought that was the greatest thing ever made.
I hated that movie.
I remember she'd come home that night, just, oh, we have seen the finest film ever made by man.
All right, right there. Finest film, right there. Wrong.
I'm like, Mom, that sounds lame. Anyway, so other cast members. This is our second film sack film with Anthony Edwards in it Revenge of the Nerds.
Goose.
Enjoyed Goose. Tom Skerritt, the venerable Tom Skerritt, always fun to watch. Michael Ironside in a movie where a lot of people didn't know who he was yet.
I can't believe this is our first Michael Ironside's movie because usually he is drawn to crap.
No, let me tell you something, Ebbett. It won't be our last. I'm sure of that. John Stockwell, I've seen him in other stuff. He was Cougar. Rick Rosevich, who played Slider, hasn't done much lately, but that guy was in the Steve Martin movie. Yeah, Roxanne.
Yeah. Oh, he was the bumbling fireman that Steve Martin helps.
Yeah, a couple years later. A totally cool-looking dude. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened... to him. There's a lot of talk about how he's in stuff.
Did he have his own Corvette summer?
No. He's in stuff. It's just real spread out and doesn't seem to be that interested. The material I could find about what's going on with him is that he has just gone really into heavy, heavy duty fatherhood mode, Family Guy stuff.
Oh, that jerk.
Yeah, not Family Guy like Family Guy, but you know what I mean.
And don't forget Clarence Gilliard Jr. as Sundown, because they certainly didn't forget him while making this film. You will see Clarence Gilliard Jr. in the back of every scene that has more than three pilots in it. If there are more than three pilots in a scene, he's sitting in the back, smiling this huge, bright white smile, usually wearing sunglasses, ready to take over the microphone if you're singing.
Yeah,
that is too funny. I love that.
The dude that played the principal in Back to the Future was in this. And
what about the underuse of Meg Ryan?
Well, she wasn't anybody then.
Yeah, this was like
doesn't matter. He should have been able to tell that she was somebody.
This was her breakout role where people went, "Ooh, she's so cute and bubbly. We got to make her in more stuff." And that's where it kind of went from there. So good for her. But she was like way underbilled. Like her billing showed up like with a group of other names, you know, and stuff.
I didn't particularly like her Southern accent attempt in this film. I didn't see the need for it enough times
to really affect me, to tell you the truth.
Well, Randy, I'm glad Randy referred to it as an attempt, because I felt like it wasn't very good either. But again, she was hurt. She was hardly even in this thing. And who? What is the name of the guy that played the principal on Back to the Future? I can't find his stupid name. Anyway, he's the guy that was chomping on
his
cigar.
What was his nickname in this one?
Well, he didn't have one. That's he was old as dirt.
The bald guy.
The
ship captain. He did have a nickname, I'll have you know.
What was it?
Ship captain.
Yeah, ship captain. Rear Admiral Bunghole.
I'm going to say it wasn't that.
Hold on a second. Keep talking. I love that guy.
It's not Air Boss Johnson. That's the guy that kept getting buzzed.
Your James, ego's writing checks that your body can't
James
cash.
Tolkien. James
I
Tolkien.
Want some butts.
James Tolkien is his name.
James
and
Tolkien.
His name is... His Stinger. Stinger. That's right. Stinger.
Stinger.
See, everybody's got one.
All right. So, fine.
You mean to say what Meg Ryan's was?
No.
Okay.
I love how his character, when they were up in the air over the Indian Ocean, there's two distinct scenes of dogfighting where they're, you know, where he's basically in command of the air squadron on a aircraft carrier. The whole time he's standing back and he's got this cherry on the end of a huge fat cigar that's too large to preserve. It's not possible that you could smoke a cigar for more than a second and have a bright red glowing cherry that big. They had to work their asses off to get those shots of him.
Yeah. And those guys were
CGI.
Carrying- Yeah, absolutely. It had to be. And the guys running around with the sweat bottles, those guys were working hard.
Yeah, spraying everybody left and right. That's true. Everybody was sweating up a storm in this movie and didn't seem to be bothered by it much.
No, not at all.
Probably because it was cold water out of a spray bottle somewhere
in California.
Most
of the movie takes place in San Diego, where I guess it's cool for you to hang out in a full leather jacket half the time. Yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah.
It's hot. It's nice and hot there. Sweating, it makes sense. Leather jacket, not at all.
All you had
you
to say.
You don't play volleyball with
your pants,
full pants, full denim jeans on.
Yeah, I can't think nothing cooler than getting really sweaty playing volleyball and then quickly jumping on your motorcycle and riding out to your new girlfriend's house and
for wearing a leather jacket. Up.
Yeah, with a leather jacket and a little finger for a little finger food date.
Yeah,
that's right.
Take my breath away. What does that?
You stink. He got crotch rot there, Tom Cruise. Take a shower, for heaven's sakes. But anyway, yeah, that stuff was weird. Digging through the other credits here, the one that really stands out as kind of a weird thing is that Tim Robbins was in this film prior to much of his renown in any other movies, and he spent most of it behind a mask. And when he did finally pop out at the end there, it was really weird to see him sort of there as this
towering,
guy.
Towering over everyone else.
Yeah, totally towering. Oh, my gosh. He was taller than Goose. And he,
Tina said that there's no way that he'd actually be able to be in the Air Force because he's over the height limit of the
he'd be
the pilot.
His own cockpit.
Like, they say they have a hard 6'2" height limit.
Do they?
She says this, and I don't know if it's true, but I know we know some people who are in the Air Force.
I believe her. Well, I believe her. Why not?
So Tom Cruise is almost, he's brushing up against the lower limit though, right?
That's right.
He's Barney Fifing it down there.
Barney Fifing it.
Barney Fifing it. You don't remember the episode where he had to stretch himself to get taller so he could stay on the force?
Oh, just right. So that's become a thing now. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think the Air Force has actually implemented pictures of Tom, like stand-up cardboard cutouts of Tom Cruise and Tim Robbins and say, you must be between this height and this height to ride the big airplanes.
Was this after Howard the Duck? Because that would explain a lot why he was hidden.
Well, it's 86, so...
Howard the Duck was 80...
I want to say it was the same year, wasn't it? Maybe this was a big year for him. I don't know. Howard the Duck, 86, so same year.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was a big year for him.
It was a big year for Tim Robbins.
The worst movie of his career and possibly one of the best movies of his career.
And who knew that he was headed towards things like Shawshank Redemption in, you know, a decade's time, which was such an amazing movie. And
Sucker Foxy.
I never tire of either of those two movies. I love Hudsucker.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Shawshank Redemption. And I know on TNT it's on perpetual rerun.
Yeah,
man, I love that movie. It's just such a great movie.
So this is a good point to ask the question, is this the most famous, biggest movie we've ever covered on FilmSack?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah.
No.
Star Trek 2 might have been...
I think Star Trek 2 might have been equal or maybe a little bit less, but isn't there something like...
This made something like, what, like 15 million or something? What did it make, like 30 million?
300,
it made a lot. 353, I wouldn't be close.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So if you're talking box office heft,
I was thinking about the opening weekend.
I think you have to be right. I think that as good as Drop Zone was, or you know, I mean, War Games is a big deal. Breakfast Club's a big deal. I mean, these movies are big deals, but are they the splash of the money makers that this is? No way.
Well, I wonder what Planet of the Apes is adjusted.
Oh, good question.
True movie.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and in terms of like cultural impact, maybe it's not the biggest, but certainly it's got to be the biggest blockbuster that we've covered on the show. Which is that's actually a really good question. I don't, you know, in the end, I found the movie enjoyable on a couple of weird levels, mostly because being surprised about how well the fighting held up, the air stuff held up, and the general lack of tricks with special effects was kind of nice. And it also struck me as this is the first of that ilk of movies. This is the Michael Bay, Tony Scott future
that they would use for the rest of their careers.
Absolutely.
This, this movie did not stop. I mean, it was one song after the next, emotion just constantly. I mean, it was just up and down. There were really no stops.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There was no waiting around. A lot of the emotion was kind of super contrived and way artificial, but yeah.
Yeah, that's the reason why you had the music there, was to do that. And they actually got the music beforehand, before they made this film.
They did. So Kenny Loggins was at the ready and said, hey.
Yeah, I'll sing it.
Well, I have some good trivia about that, in fact. Bryan Adams. I'm a fan of Bryan Adams.
You would be.
I am.
Who isn't?
Yeah, who isn't? How can you not be? Mm-hmm. I guess there's probably some argument.
I don't know.
Anyway,
he cuts like a knife, man.
He was asked to allow his song "Only the Strong Survive" on the soundtrack, but he refused because he felt the film glorified war.
Which is, yeah, right on, brother.
I guess that's right.
Which it did.
Damn Canadian. Just kidding. I only say that because Randy's in Canada right now. Charlie's older man date. Remember that in the Officers Club? The whatever.
Yeah,
yeah.
His real life. He's the real life Viper. Pete Pettigrew. He is a retired Navy pilot and a Top Gun instructor, and shot down a MiG during Vietnam. He served as the technical consultant on the film. So there's some fun tips for you.
Yeah, it is.
Like the love scene, the elevator scene where Maverick and Charlie meet after Mav's workout was filmed post-production. Kelly McGillis's hair had already been colored for another movie role, and that's why she's wearing that stupid hat.
And that's actually the most attractive I found her in the whole movie, when she was wearing that hat.
Agreed.
So that's probably the number one spot to start talking about the gay references in the film.
Okay.
I can't think of a better like gay twist in the film than he's playing volleyball with the boys. He has to leave the boys to go meet up with her. He meets up with her. They get a little drunk. She says to him in pretty certain terms, "This is going to be complicated," which is the same as saying, "I'm about to jump you and do you." He then flees her house, absolutely refuses to have sex with her in a time when, I mean, he's been spending the movie up to this point trying to get her to have sex with him. He finally gets the opportunity. He leaves. He goes back to work. And then after he works out or takes a shower or whatever, he gets on an elevator, and there she is, dressed up to look like a man with her hair pulled back so she looks like a dude, and then they go have sex.
All right.
That
I don't think you read anything additional into that whatsoever.
I didn't.
I mean, that played out.
There's a lot of those sorts of things that happen in this film, but I think that's probably the most, you know, direct reference to the other story.
But does it color that impression to know that she was wearing the hat to color the cover the hair color change that she had for Witness or whatever other damn movie?
Oh,
she was
absolutely. Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she shouldn't have been. She looked like she had to sneak into base. She was trying not to be noticed.
Totally.
Yeah. You know?
I agree with that.
Which which takes away from the whole love story completely.
It makes sense to me now why that scene always threw me off. Like, what is she doing like that? Is she there to work on the mechanic side of things today, or
yeah, right?
I never could figure that out until the internet gave me hope. Okay. Let's see. Both John Carpenter and David Cronenberg turned down a chance to direct the film. Both of those would have been weird as hell.
Oh, Cronenberg doing Top Gun, man. That would have been awesome.
Weird. At some point, you know what that would have involved? It would have involved a scene where Maverick is flying in his jet, and then suddenly would be so high in the atmosphere, you'd have a vision of like some kind of snake creature coming out of the glove box.
Right?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if like Stanley Kubrick had done this film?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Jeez. I did notice on the topic of that, whenever they were going on pulling these really heavy G's, they never really even talked about that much in this movie, which I was kind of surprised about.
Well, they're supposed to be pro pilots, and Tom Cruise would do the whole shake it off thing after a big dip or a big, you know, turn or something. He'd kind of like have to squeeze his eyes and figure out where he's at and get his orientation again. So I think they kind of alluded to it, but you're right. They didn't really get into that. Most movies play that up. If you're talking about air travel or even like The Right Stuff, where they have to train a lot, they make a big deal about the forces of the G's,
yo. Yeah.
So no Cronenberg, no Carpenter. The movie's line, I quote, I feel the need for speed. Damn it, I can't even read. I feel the need for speed was voted as number 94 in as far as 94th in the 100 most important movie quotes by the American Film Institute.
Most important.
American Film Institute can't be trusted to pick a damn thing. God, they
I can't believe they have a list of the most important movie quotes.
Yeah, it's very important.
Like important to the film or important to
mankind.
Yeah. Okay.
It sure as hell doesn't fall into like the top 50 most important quotes in the film. I don't know.
Well, all I'm saying is remember that line when we get to Fletcher quote time, because you're in for a treat. All right. Louis Gossett Jr. was considered for the role of Viper. Gossett, however, did play the older mentor role in another 80s fighter jet film, Iron Eagle, in 1986, and its crappy sequels.
Well, see, that was a better move for him. Overall, he probably made more money.
Probably made a little more money, but still. I can't imagine him. Like, what if he'd have done both? That would have been weird as hell.
Mm-hmm. Well, and because they ended up with a room full of guys who look like Rick Rossovich, they had to cast Clarence Gilliard as, you know, window dressing in practically every scene. So
that's right.
It worked out well for Clarence Gilliard Jr. as well.
Do y'all notice Adrian Pasdar, who
I didn't notice him until the end.
Chipper. He barely had any screen time, but he played a character named Chipper. And that's the dude that played Nathan, whatever his last name was, in the Heroes series.
What the heck was his last name?
Whatever it was, Nathan Jerkface.
Yeah. Nathan Petrelli.
Petrelli, thank you.
Petrelli, yeah. Heroes.
Yeah, Heroes is such a distant memory for me now, I can't remember anyone's names. But that was weird seeing him in like this. That felt like the only CGI moment to me because he looked so young. It was weirding me out.
Yeah, he was looking a lot like Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. Oh, there's a total Bacon. Total Bacon thing there.
He looked like Bacon.
Anytime anyone looks like Kevin Bacon, I want to see an arrow come up through his neck out from under the bed he's lying on.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Hey guys, breaking in for a quick Audible.com announcement that I'm so excited about. Audible.com has just added a great new book to their service. And good thing, because our code gets you a free book, and I think this is a good place to start. You know I'm a huge fan of George Guidel. He reads lots of books, lots of great books. Does a lot of the Stephen King Dark Tower series, which I love. He did American Gods, which I love, from Neil Gaiman. And he reads this book. By Vince Flynn, the brand new American Assassin, just released on 10/12/10. So very, very recent release, and I'm hearing nothing but great things about this. It is a spy novel, but much, much more than that, and I cannot wait to hear it myself. I'm totally going to get it, so should you, and if you want to get it for free, and you're a listener of FilmSack, it's easy. Go to audiblepodcast.com/FilmSack, and you can get that free audiobook today, or any audiobook, out of the thousands upon thousands that they have at Audible. So go check it out again. That is audiblepodcast.com/FilmSack. Anyway, moving on. What else? Principal Back to the Future, we talked about him. Fighter footage holds up. Talked about that. Oh, the coffee spill joke was old before I saw it the three times they used it. Okay, so I want to get to this thing about Randy's quote at the top of the show. So the opening text says, only flyers call it the Top Gun program. That's the gist of that whole thing. Yeah. Yet everyone in this movie had a mug or a hat or a t-shirt. Yeah. And nobody ever referred to it.
Secret military clearance, unless you have this hat.
No one called it anything but Top Gun.
Yeah, the only time you ever see it called Advanced Flying School or whatever it was called was at the top of the bulletin board in the locker room where they're taking a shower.
Yeah. Yeah, like even where they could have put the regular title of the place on hangars and stuff, the hangars call it Fighter Town USA. I thought that was funny. Yeah.
Awesome. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of a weird thing. All right, we are going to do some clippage, and we have a vast number of them, so we may as well get started now. Clips from the film. We meet Mav and Goose for the very first time while they're flying their F-16.
Talk to me, Goose. Roger, I got him. Contact 20 left at 30 miles, 900 knots closure. Cougar, you hear that?
Roger.
Merlin, you got him?
Roger, I've got radar contact.
I'll get a visual ID, Cougar. You hook him.
Roger, and I'll clean him and fry him.
Oh, shut up. So lame. I got a question, though. Who has a dog named Daisy?
I do.
I thought you did. No. I thought Scott had a dog
named Daisy.
I do have a dog named Daisy.
She's sitting here staring at me like I'm crazy.
Probably so. Probably can hear all that audio. What the crap are they talking about?
So am I wrong? Are they not F-16s? I just said that because I don't know. Are they M-16s? M-16s are a gun. See, look how military-ish I am.
They're kind of hard to fly. They're not really aerodynamic. But they're F-14s.
Yeah, that's the principal protagonist vehicle in this film is the F-14.
Yeah.
And they really, really used every scrap of footage that they could of F-14s flying in places where they would look natural for the film, you know.
Yep.
It was really remarkable how many different shots they had of that plane, because, you know, before this movie and going back to the inception of that vehicle, you didn't really have a lot of video out there of the F-14. It was supposed to be kind of, you know,
top secret.
Yeah. Not top secret, but just, you know, something you didn't see much.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder why so many people our age saw this film and thought, maybe I could join the Navy and be a pilot.
Did y'all ever see the Firefox movie? Talks about the beginnings of the popular browser? No. The one that talked about the stealth bomber that Clint Eastwood flew and stuff? Do you guys remember that?
I remember the movie. Uh-huh. I don't know if I ever saw it.
That's totally, we should watch that. It's on streaming. It's good. It just reminds me of what Randy said, because that kind of stuff was like super top
secret.
That's
what scares me too. It's like, okay, if they're showing us this, what do they have that they're not showing us?
Yeah. Tom Cruise is pantsless in the cockpit.
Well,
that's why they call it that.
That's a fair question. You know, the F-14 by this point is like 15 to 18 years old by the time this film comes out. And so you have to think, well, it's not long in the tooth by any means, but it's been around long enough that we can use it. And there's something else behind it, you know, and that was probably the FA-18, you know, the Super Hornet.
Yeah.
There's, you know, something kind of behind it that we're not seeing that the Navy's using.
Well, we do learn early on that Maverick plays by his own rules, doesn't really pay attention to what people want him to do. He's going to do his own thing.
Is that why they call him Maverick?
That might be. He is going after Cougar, whether they like it or not.
What are you doing, man? We've got no fuel for this.
We're going after Cougar.
You tell him to land that plane. That's an order.
Any of you boys seen an aircraft carrier around here?
All right, McFly, land your plane.
Right?
Jeez. That scene really annoyed me. I can't stand when they do that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, so he's going to fly up there, and because now he's next to him, he's going to be able to talk him down. Proximity, I get it. No, I don't. What the crap? Just land, and you can still talk him down.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand his whole freak out. I'm like,
this is interesting, seeing it through Brian Dunaway's eyes. So, like, did you catch that Maverick goes back around to get on Cougar's wing and just say, I'm going to go through the motions right next to you, so you just follow?
No, I didn't miss that. I just thought that was kind of lame, because I'm like, okay, if he does that, then he can do it. I'm like, no.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, the just having the moral support there isn't enough in your mind for a guy who's supposed to be top of his class.
So, yeah, for somebody who's totally traumatically, you know, just totally traumatized, I just can't see somebody pulling up their, you know, their plane and go, okay, follow me.
And I'm also thinking, I kept thinking that whole time, if I'm that traumatized and I got that picture of my wife and baby on my dashboard, I would want to go land as quickly as possible, not hang around in the air and run out of fuel, if that's really my big fear. If my big fear is that I'm going to die and leave my family, then get the hell down to the boat and leave the program.
And I may get hate mail for that, because somebody says, that's exactly how it happens with trauma.
I don't know, maybe.
But it doesn't play well in the film. Let's put it that way. Okay. I don't care if that's how it is in real life. It just didn't play well in the film.
So what's the role of the guy in the back then? I mean, because obviously he doesn't have
second. He's the spotter. He's the, our radar sucks. We can't tell how many of anything is. It's like, oh, there's one. No, wait, there's 12. We was wrong.
But there's got to be more to it than that, right?
Yeah, because he can't fire the guns. He obviously can't take over flying the plane if the front guy gets traumatized.
His position is officially like, I forget what it is, radar spotter or something like that.
Your radar intercept officer has a ton of systems he's working on that the driver just couldn't possibly have enough hands and eyes to pay attention to everything. He's got to fly the plane, and it's a complicated plane to fly.
He's so, watching the radar. That's what he's doing. He's watching the radar and pinpointing things. And that's the reason why he keeps jerking his head around. Over here.
There are a number of two-seater pilot fighter planes. It's not just F-14s that are like that. There's There are all kinds of planes that require a not require a Rio, but only really work well in dogfighting if you've got another guy in there helping the pilot with all the systems.
Don't you also think that at some weird fundamental level, it's a buddy system thing? I mean, I realize there's more technical stuff happening, but when you've got two minds at once and one of them is compromised because of, you know, maybe his oxygen crap broke and he can't think, and this other guy's got to try to... But I guess what I kept running into was like, all right, well, Cougar's lost his mind up there. So now Merlin, or whoever's back there, was that who that was? He's going, well, crap. I can't do anything from back here.
I'm kind of screwed back here. Could you do something?
He can't really climb over. I mean, he can communicate with the ground and say, all right, well, the pilot's kind of lost his junk. We may have to eject. I hope they fix that ceiling problem so I don't hit my head. So I don't know. That stuff's very interesting to me, and I don't know a lot about it.
That's the part that kind of pissed me off, too. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brian.
Putting it in the terms that I can understand, he's basically the R2-D2 of the X-Wing.
Pretty much.
Yes!
Pretty much.
Yes. Totally.
Yeah.
That's okay, R2.
There are certainly planes that the co-pilot, you know, he acts as a co-pilot. He's got control. So if the if the driver, you know, loses consciousness, he can land the plane, that sort of thing. It's, you know, but yeah, they're not considered aviators in most cases. They're, you know, they're given some other title like naval flight officer.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. It is. R2 unit is what they are for me from now on. All right, moving on to the principal, and well, I'll pay you two clips. One is the principal kind of trying to figure out where Cougar's head is. By the way, I know a guy named Cougar, and he named himself that because he went to BYU and he's an idiot. Actually, yeah,
you're not going to find too many people using that call sign these days. Yeah, as soon as I fly back to the aircraft carrier, I'm going to go pick up some young boys.
It's like being named Longhorn or freaking whatever. It's because he's a, you know, he's
I like that.
Yeah.
Let's see. I actually went to Texas A&I, so I would call myself Hapalina. How about you guys?
I would be, you'd have to call me Ute. Or
awesome. Bad, that's a great call sign.
Bad Indian stereotype, I guess is what you'd call me. Native, that is. Not like, well, hello, we cannot do it. Anyway. Let's play the clip of the principal talking it out with Cougar.
My wife and kids, sir. Almost orphaned them today. I've never even seen them. I don't know what happened up there, but I was so...
Wait a minute. Can I stop for a second?
Hold up.
It's my wife and kid today. I've never even seen them.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I'm assuming he was talking about the kid.
Well, I hope so, unless this is a story about a glory hole in Vegas or something.
I don't even know what happened. Right. I never even got her name.
Didn't mean to stop that. Here's the rest.
Maybe he's gonna orphan them.
Come on, we've seen this before.
No, sir. I'm holding on too tight. I've lost the edge.
I'm going to talk
Scott,
like this.
I'm off the show. I'm hanging up. I've lost the edge.
You're going to turn in your...
If you've learned anything from 38 Special, it's that you hang on loosely.
Right. But you don't let go.
Don't let go. Because if you cling too tightly, you're going to lose control.
Oh,
that's exactly
right. I love 38 Special. I did. I love, was such a fan.
I love whichever Van Zandt brother sang that. I don't know which one.
I forgot they were Van Zandt brothers, but I do remember loving the band. Thought they were awesome. I wonder if Kurt Schilling likes 38 Special. Just wondering.
Of course he does.
38 Studios, very good.
Who doesn't?
Wow.
All right. At the fingertips. Now we have the same principal talking to McFly, talking to Maverick. I can't think of him in any other way because he's iconic as that. But he's talking to Maverick and giving him what for?
Maverick, you just did an incredibly brave thing. What you should have done was land your plane. You don't own that plane, the taxpayers do. Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash. You've been busted.
Wow.
You lost your qualifications as section leader 3 times. Put in hack twice by me. With a history of high-speed passes over 5 air-controlled towers and 1 admiral's daughter. And you, asshole, you're lucky to be here.
Thank you, sir.
I love that. That's actually my favorite.
So your body is cashing checks. No, what's that?
Your
ego is writing checks that your body can't cash.
That's a terrible, terrible
line. I like that.
Line. It's a terrible line.
But if you take it down to the check cashing place, you give them 2 forms of ID.
They'll cash your ego. No problem. Okay, we got Tom Cruise proving to the world that he should never sing.
Excuse me, miss.
Hey.
Don't worry, I'll take care of this.
You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. There's no tenderness like before in your fingertips. You're trying hard not to show it, baby. But baby, believe me, I know it.
Okay.
Man. Yeah.
Make it
Man,
stop.
He could really use some auto-tune.
Yeah, dude.
Totally. I'd like to hear that in auto-tune.
Somebody needs to get on that with the T-Pain app.
So how I have an embarrassing story to admit to briefly. After this movie aired, I was a sophomore or junior in high school, something like that. And my friends and I, myself, Mark and Dan, used to go to ladies' night at this dance place. And one night...
You know it's ladies' night, right?
Yeah, well, no, that's because they got in free and there were tons of them.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's kind of... Yeah, well, maybe it's a bit of a Top Gun thing anyways, now that I think about it. But anyway, so I get there... Or we're there for a while and we meet this girl in some place and Dan has this bright idea that we should do that stupid scene.
Yeah.
And so we literally did that. Just the three of us. No crowd to back us up. Sang this song to some stupid girl we never saw again in the middle of the lobby and it was embarrassing and I'll never forget it.
Thank God you never saw her again.
Yeah. So, how many movies had that impact on me? Not very many.
Not many. That was a huge scene. I had never seen the movie before and I knew what that scene meant. I had seen enough times in like whatever it is, AFI's whatever scenes or whatever they always do.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna play my favorite dialogue in the film. I'll give a hint. It has to do with Johnson's. Check it out.
Hey, Slider. Thought you wanted to be a pilot, man. What happened?
Goose, you're such a dickhead. Whose butt did you kiss to get in here, huh?
Well, the list is long but distinguished.
Yeah, well, so's my Johnson.
So you're flying with Iceman, huh?
Mr. Iceman to you.
This is a great conversation.
That is so awesome.
But three dick references in two sentences.
Plus, I had that great 80s kind of like horn stuff in the back. Oh, it was great.
I love that scene.
And I also like it when Ice did his cough move, because then this got copied. To this day, I still hear people do this, but where they'll cough a swear word, that whole bullshit kind of thing people do.
Yeah.
They got it from this movie, I think. It may have existed before, but it sure seemed to take on new life after this. And I captured that whole little moment in 20 seconds.
So, Lieutenant, where exactly were you?
Well, we...
Thank you.
Started up on his six when he pulled through the clouds, and then I moved in above him.
Well, if you were directly above him, how could you see him?
Because I was inverted.
Bullshit!
Just like my nipples.
I was
just
inverted.
Like my Johnson.
Inverted.
When did Real Genius happen? Like when was?
Years before. Like at least 2 years before this.
Yeah, 83, 84.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so this wasn't his first trip to the party here.
No.
Oh, it was 85.
Nice metaphor, I guess.
It was 85. 85. Year before. Yeah. So it wasn't that. It seems like the start of Val Kilmer's success kind of happened in a very compressed period of time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like a lot of stuff.
Willow and Top Secret.
You count Willow? Okay.
Top Secret was his first movie in 84.
Was that his first movie?
Yep. He was then in ABC After School special in 85. That same year did Real Genius, then Top Gun in 86. And then from there, Willow came in 88, and then it was all downhill from there.
Right.
Remember Thunderheart? Oh, it's a good movie.
I do remember Thunderheart and The Doors.
You know why Thunderheart was good? Because it featured the actor Graham Greene, that guy from Dances with Wolves, the Indian dude. He's awesome.
You know what? I just followed the phrase, it was all downhill from there, with the word right. And quite frankly, I don't even stand for that. I feel like you could have a career of all the worst choices and the fattest jowls ever on Val Kilmer, and the one performance in Tombstone makes up for all of it and makes him legendary.
Oh, I agree. And when I say downhill, I meant ease of like getting good roles from there on. I didn't mean it like, his career started sucking. I don't think that happened until like 2000.
Dude, have you guys seen Felon from 2008 with Val Kilmer?
Yes.
When he's like the prison guy. I'm telling you, he's badass in that movie.
No, that's an amazing performance. If you haven't seen Felon, it's not a great movie overall. Like it's okay. But
Val great. Is great in that movie.
Yeah, I will. And that's on streaming. You should see it. It's really, really quite good. He blew my mind. In fact, I'd kind of written him off until I saw that. Too. And it kind of was like, oh, dude, that's pretty good. He was Mark Twain in a movie not long ago, and that was real bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have to say it, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. That was real bad.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. What was that one called? Felon?
Felon, yeah.
Felon. That was 2008. You're right. He played John Smith, and he was awesome in that.
Awesome. Anyway, great.
Go check that out. Comanche Moon, not so much.
Nah.
Voice of Kit, not so much.
Oh, my gosh, no.
don't forget his voice of Kit. All right, we got another one. A fight in the gym. This is the teeth-chomping scene.
You guys really are cowboys.
What's your problem, Kazansky?
You're everyone's problem. That's because every time you go up in the air, you're unsafe. I don't like you because you're dangerous.
That's right. Nice, man. I am dangerous.
Could you hear it?
Yeah.
Maverick.
Yeah.
You and Goose get your butts out of that flight gear and up to Viper's office.
That's Sam Fisher, dude. Sam Fisher.
Nice.
I had to
keep
that in.
You guys stop ass grabbing and kissing and get up to the office.
That is a really bad performance by Tom Cruise in that scene.
That was terrible. Yeah.
It was pretty bad.
I am.
Could you hear his teeth, though? I tried to boost that up.
Tremendous performance by his nose. His nose really took up a lot of the screen in that film.
Yeah, that's true. Ladies' room joke. I don't remember what this is.
Oh, my gosh, I do.
Do you? Okay. I kind of do. Oh, yeah, I do remember now. Here it is.
The plaque for the alternates is down in the ladies' room.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, you kill me. You really do.
That now I remember why I blocked that out. I didn't hate you, Anthony Edwards. I didn't hate Goose in this. I get the idea of having the goofy, you know, sidekick guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know.
I liked his character.
He was all right.
I love the fact he had that silly mustache too.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right,
it was like his own character. His mustache was silly.
It was a pretty sweet stash. You can be my wingman is probably the most commonly repeated phrase from this film. So our last clip, what'd you say?
These guys, before you play this last clip, I mean, if you watch this movie, the one thing that I really noticed was, I mean, they eat, live, everything is as though it were about flying, because every joke they crack, everything they mention, anytime you mention anything outside of flying, also they also are referencing some type of flight term.
Well, part of it too is every word out of their mouths is the most macho thing you could say in the circumstance.
Yeah,
the most swaggering, "Hey, look at me, you know, my poop don't stink" kind of stance on everything they'd say.
and they give you the impression they're the kind of guys that would walk into the local bank and the teller would say, "What's your name, sir?" And say, "Maverick." You know, like that they can never ever turn off.
I'm sorry, sir. No, it's just Maverick.
I'm sorry, Mr. Maverick. I can't find you.
All right, it's Pete something. It's like Pete Evans or some terrible, stupid name. And Kazansky was Val Kilmer's name.
He's nice man.
Yeah, it was stupid.
I would. You know, when we were watching it this time, I was thinking, you know, it might have been interesting to see a movie done from Iceman's point of view, because all right, here's this guy. He, you know, he's one of the best, maybe the best there, has one freak out moment near the end. But overall, like, he plays it safe. He supports his, he's the wingman to his, the other pilot that he goes out with. You know, it's like, is Tom Cruise just cooler because he's the renegade, the maverick, the bad guy, the bad good guy?
Short. He's just got talent. You know, he's just naturally talented.
He has short man's disease, and that means he has to try harder than everyone else.
Yeah,
because really
I have this thing, Brian, where I like to take films and imagine this that it's all about this other character entirely. Mm-hmm. My favorite example is in the movie Garden State. I like to look at the whole film from Peter Sarsgaard's character's perspective. I just think it makes the movie very, very interesting.
That'd be interesting.
And your movie. Yeah, well, whatever. And you're absolutely right. Like, this is the kind of movie that would be equally as interesting, right? Because it would end with the guy winning the Top Gun trophy, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And then going off to war, some incident with some Libyans, and having this other guy that he's been competing with, who's an asshole, basically throughout the whole film,
yeah,
come up and make things a little better, you know, and then get back down and everything's cool. Like I think you're actually onto something there. Mm.
The Iceman Show.
I wouldn't mind seeing that movie either. Sounds all right.
Ah,
to me.
With Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
Currently.
Well, here is the.
He can tell a story about how it went all wrong.
Here's where people think the most gay moment outside of the volleyball game happened in the film, and I may agree. Here it is.
You are still dangerous. You can be my wingman anytime.
Bullshit. You can be mine.
Yeah, that was a little questionable.
All right, I made up that last part, but anyway, I liked it. And on the whole, I liked it. I had a good time. Yeah. It holds up in lots of ways. It's cheesy, and we're past some of the tropes, and it's kind of ridiculously trying to be funny in parts and isn't, and stuff like that. But for a movie this old, I felt like the direction was strong, the visuals were strong, the acting was okay. It's good. It's a fun thing to see.
Yeah.
And Kelly McGillis was kind of hot in her day.
I agree. Yeah. I loved her in Witness too.
Yeah,
I liked her in Witness better.
You liked her in Wet Nurse, you're talking about.
Wet Nurse better.
Witness is such a great movie in general.
Yeah.
Is that a Peter Weir movie? Or what's that director? Crap. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I said that for that guy on the blog who will no doubt mention it. I can't remember, but I love that guy's movies. He did a Master and Commander movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever his name is. Peter Weir, I think, is his name.
I think it is Peter Weir.
Yeah. Love Witness. Oh, my gosh. Any movie that you can take as of that time, relatively unknown.
Consolo?
No. Who's the guy? Is the black guy that's in Lethal Weapon? I can't think of his name all of a sudden.
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover. And bury him in cornmeal. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Great movie. Anyway.
Right. Yeah, that is
a Peter
Weir.
Is that how it ends?
That's not how it ends. That's how you know you're getting to the end.
That's how it ends for Danny Glover. Yeah.
That's how it ends for him. So let's move on to a change in something that we usually do on the show. So I haven't told you guys about it because I wanted it to be a surprise. And for the fans as well, we are changing.
You're gonna sing to us, aren't you?
The Film Sack list is no longer the Film Sack list. This is now the Film Sack Awards for this film.
Oh, nice. I like that idea.
We're going to give specific awards for specific movies. There'll be common ones with every movie, but always something maybe a little bit new. And this week, we're giving away the award that we call the Shannon Tweed Booby Award.
Oh.
That goes to almost Kelly McGillis for the love scene. I was proud
that they didn't show it.
There was a lot of Tom Cruise tongue going on there, though.
Oh, yeah. That was almost uncomfortable amount of tongue.
No, it was very uncomfortable.
All right. But that scene, you're talking about the scene that starts with the silhouette, the two of them are facing each other?
Dear. Yeah.
Once again, you must remember we watched the next. I watched the. I didn't watch the next place version. Sorry, go ahead.
And as the scene starts, her hand has been down somewhere and it's rising up.
Mm.
Like they're facing each other and you're seeing their full silhouettes, and her hand, as the scene starts, is coming up past his stomach. And you're like, where was her hand just now?
Mm.
And why did that was, it looks kind of awkward. It looks like she was just doing something, but she's not.
I think they cut it. They cut it.
No, they're just going to stare at each other.
It's only in Tony Scott's personal version of the film.
Right.
I can't find, let's see. Hold on. Is this what I have? No, I thought I had that song. Take my breath away. I don't have.
Boy,
it.
They and it's funny how many times they cue up the beginning of that song too.
They did.
Many times. Yeah.
It was the love theme, kind of like. And if they weren't playing that, if they weren't playing that, they were doing that. Not that one. Hold on, this one.
Yeah, that one.
Where the guitar
was awesome. I listened to this in my 7.1 headphones, and it still sounded good.
All right. Nice. The award, the Wilford Brimley Mustache Award, goes to Tom Skerritt. Now, you guys can completely disagree with me on any of these. If you think Goose deserved a better stash award, you can say so.
Well,
because this is the voting right here. This is us voting before the big.
Goose did do a pretty dang good job. That thing was on there pretty good.
It's got a life of its own, yeah.
Love Tom Skerritt. The Jerry Lewis Bad Stereotype Award goes to The Ending with Ice and Mav. And what I mean by that, it wasn't like a stereotype in the traditional way, like some jive-talking black dude or some Chinese thing or anything like that. It's the way that movie ends that I hate movies that end that way. I hate the whole, we were fighting Didn't with each other the whole time, but you know what? I'll be your wingman anytime.
It's a classic example of way too many endings. It's got that. Then the ending where he throws away the dog tags. Then the ending where he's back in Miramar. Wait. After the dog tags are thrown away, we have the ending where he declares that he's going back to Miramar.
Yep.
Then the ending where he's actually back in Miramar. It's freaking ridiculous. Yep. Give me a break.
Yep. Yeah. The Darth Maul Dumbest Death Award goes to Goose. It's a stupid death. Shouldn't have happened.
It was a really lame death. And I don't care what you say, Matt. I don't care what they said about you, Maverick. It was your fault. You were tailgating the other dude. No. And you got caught.
No. It was Iceman's fault. It was Iceman's fault.
Yeah, no, Iceman was just trying to do it.
No. Iceman would not pull away when someone was telling him he had a better shot.
And then when Iceman finally leave.
When Iceman finally does pull away, he does it wrong. Iceman does it wrong. It's his big mistake in the whole film, and it kills a man.
I think it was ultimately Meg Ryan's fault.
It was still Tom Cruise's fault.
The West Studi Best Small Role Award goes to Michael Ironside. Thought he was great. Baby Ruth Bodily Function Award. There wasn't any. I just wanted you guys to be aware of that award.
Oh, good. I can't wait till the first recipient of that one.
The David Ogden Stier Star Trek Connection Award. Skerritt was an alien in TNG in the episode Poison.
Also, the battle carrier was named Enterprise.
Yep. Oh, I forgot about that. That's a good one.
Oh, wow.
Ben Kenobi Award. Tom Skerritt.
Yep.
Man, he's walking away with all the
awards
tonight.
Yeah, he is cleaning up tonight. The number 5 Comedy Relief Award goes to Goose, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, here's one we could argue about. The Chewbacca Sidekick Award. I'm going to give Rick Rossovich and Slider instead of Goose, because I think as a Chewbacca-style sidekick, I feel like Slider was more, I don't know.
I kind of feel like Jester was more the Chewbacca.
He was kind of Viper's Chewbacca, wasn't he?
Yeah, much more.
That's a good point. That's a fair...
He's like a retired Chewbacca. Yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
The Mr. T Montage Award goes to the first 5 minutes of the film because there really was no other montage. But them landing and taking off planes for 5 minutes while we listen to Danger Zone, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Listen to this one very closely. The Phallus Diller Award.
Phallus Diller.
There wasn't one, but I had to make sure to get that in. But it really was military porn at its highest degree. Like, this was like, look at us, man. We're Americans. Wow. And it's just so, like, polished and so not accurate. And I don't mean that the military is all jerky and horrible. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it is a disciplined place where Tom Cruise can't just dance around in his jeans and do what he wants. It's a different environment than they make it out to be. So we'll give it that. And then I want to, at the end of this, what grade do we give the soundtrack? Through A through F.
Ooh.
How do we
you know,
land?
It's funny. There's a couple different ways you can go, because there's the Harold Faltermeyer score, which sounded like he broke out the 36 key Casio tone for that one. But then there's also the pop music soundtrack. And I mean, you know, Kenny Loggins is great. The guy signs up for any movie you're doing. You know, he's like, hey, can I do a song for your soundtrack?
He's just bumping around the studio asking people if he can do a song.
That's like, great. Are you doing a golf movie? Hey, can I do a song for your soundtrack?
I like that idea.
I love that idea. That's awesome.
From the pop music side, I thought it was a great soundtrack.
Yeah, I'd give it probably a B from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's all the iconic moments were surrounded by that stuff. So I'm okay with giving it a B overall, because I felt like the soundtrack part was, it was all right. Just kind of blah, whatever. Yeah. The Faltermeyer stuff. But the pop music was great. So Ibbot, what grade would you give it?
I'd give it a B plus.
B plus. Perfect. Brian Dunaway.
I give it an A because I never even seen the movie and this album was very impactful.
You listened to the album as a kid though.
Yeah. I listened to the album as a kid just constantly. I mean, Take My Breath Away is like one of the all-time greatest love songs ever.
You just didn't know it was
a little trivia about that song, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Very little of it had to do with Berlin. It's really just Berlin and the fact that it's got Terry Nunn doing the vocals. The music part of it was done completely by Giorgio Moroder. And the original version of the song, I've got a version of it sung by Martha Davis from the Motels. It's the same song with just Martha Davis singing it instead of Terry Nunn.
Dude, you're like a wizard, man. I don't understand how you know all this stuff. Randy, how would you, you're a fan of the movie soundtracks and film music. What do you think?
Yeah. The pop music soundtrack is an A. That I had that thing on LP. I probably still do. Tremendous collection of pop music. The scoring in the film, it was kind of irrelevant. There's not enough there to really judge.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Twitter post time. This is where you guys get to sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start this week with Randy Jordan.
Top Gun, you've lost that loving feeling. Too close for missiles, switching to guns. I'm going to hit the brakes and he'll fly right by. This all makes sense to you, right? Yeah, me too.
Barely.
You must have the new Twitter.
The new fancy 256 character Twitter? I think he still made it. I think he made it.
I was giving you a hard time.
Brian Ibbot.
Top Gun. It doesn't matter what I say about the film, because unless you've been living under a rock in South Carolina, you've seen it.
Nice.
You wrote that during the show, I think. I love it.
Part of it.
And lastly, Brian Dunaway. Brian.
Top Gun. Part musical, part government propaganda. All heart. Goose. What should I tweet, Goose? What should I tweet?
All right. Are you got? Is that it?
Stay in school.
I'm just never sure.
Have we ever talked about the Bechdel test before?
The Bechdel test? No. Is it like the, what's his name's rabbit or kitten or rat? What is it? Schrodinger's cat. That's it.
This comic artist named Alison Bechdel came up with this thing where a long time ago, like 25 years ago, where you measure a film based on the female impact in the film, and the test is kind of deceptive. It's no points if there's only one woman in the film or fewer. And so it's a point if you have two women in the film. And then it's another point if they actually talk to one another. And it's another point if they talk to one another about something other than a man. Right? Mm. It's kind of like in some ways it's kind of shorthand for chick flicks, but not really.
This barely scores above that because there's only one time when Meg and what's her name?
Kelly.
Right. But for war porn, this film scores surprisingly high on the Bechdel test, and that there are two women in the film and they actually talk to one another, but of course they do talk about a man only.
Yeah, that's true. Interesting. All right, we have an email from a listener before we
take
get out
me to
here.
Bed, Goose.
Oh, by the way, this is what we learned while you were out playing beach volleyball in your pants. You are required to wear your towel up as high as possible in the Top Gun gym. I did not sign up to see Tom Cruise in his whitey tidies leaning over a sink.
No.
And lastly, Top Gun sounds like a terrible anime name.
Where do you sign up for that? Because that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know where you.
Where's the sign up for seeing the tidy whiteys?
Guys with clipboards in the mall. Email from a listener.
Tidy whiteys like to sign up?
Oh yeah. No? Roberto Suarez from Portland, Oregon wrote in and said, "Hey gang, thanks for an awesome show. On episode 48, the one about Jason Goes to Hell, you missed some important detail about actor Stephen Williams' geek cred. In addition to playing the Duke in Jason Goes to Hell, he played the infamous Mr. X in The X-Files, an informant that would help Mulder and Scully from time to time. And he also played, and this is where I knew in the back of my head I'd known him, but I couldn't remember the name. He also played Captain Adam Fuller in the 21 Jump Street show, bossing around the likes of Johnny Depp and Richard Grieco in their undercover adventures. The Duke is truly badass," he says.
21 Jump Street also on Netflix streaming.
Yeah, it is. The show. We're not going to do that for Film Sack. Show Sack.
Not the theatrical. No, not the Broadway show.
The Broadway adaptation.
No, not the Broadway adaptation. He's talking about
the off-Broadway adaptation of 21 Jump Street. I would see that.
21.
Yeah. Give us some more snap fingers. Do it, Ibbot. Dude,
that's awesome. Thank you, Roberto. If you'd like to send us your own email, and we have a very good chance. If it's interesting, we'll play it on the show. Filmsack@gmail.com. Don't forget the website, filmsack.com. Twitter.com/filmsack is where you can follow us on Twitter. We love your iTunes reviews, so give us some more of those. Stay tuned for next week. We'll be watching the film The Running Man. The Running Man, our first Arnold Schwarzenegger movie since, what was the one we saw? The Red Sonja movie. So yeah. Big deal for us because there's more of him coming. I can guarantee you that. So stay tuned for that. For me, for Brian, and for Randy, we'll see you next week.
Aloha.
Goose! Oh. Film Sack is writing checks that your headphones can't cash.
Perfect.
We are so doing Randy's theory. Randy's theory is not, it's getting proven. Like, this isn't a theory. I think it's law. This episode of Film Sack is not safe for work. Phantasm, The Lost Boys,
The Schlock, Bubba Hotep, Convoy,
Justified, the first Chucky movie, Beetlejuice,
Star Wars, Happy Days,
and Soul Man,
The Gremlins,
Raiders of the Lost Ark,
Salem's Lot,
Bug's Life, Sex on the Beach, Virtual Stud, Mechanics by Day, Lube Job by Night, Latin Crotch Rockets, Hunk Hotel, The Big Screw Up, Leather Buddies, Leather Intrusion Case 2, The Spider's Kiss,
At Close Range, Moon 44, Heaven Help Us,
Guys Who Crave Big Cock, Cock! Seaman yes. Training Day,
Navy SEALs,
Iron Eagle 4, Married with Children, Disturbia,
Rear Window,
Dracula, Bram Stoker's version, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Jaws 3,
Hot Shots,
Heidi,
The Craft,
Party of Five,
Doctor Who, Corvette Summer,
Revenge of the Nerds, Showgirls,
District 9,
True Blood,
Killing Mockingbird.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.